You're tuned in to Steve Megatron on Altered Geek.
Hello and welcome to Altered Geek. I'm your host, Steve Megatron Phillips, and joining me this week is Mike the Birdman Dodd.
What's up, party people? I don't know, I've just got a lot of energy tonight because reasons.
Because reasons, I like it.
Hey, that's because tonight I made it rain. I was in a I was in a Facebook chat for one of those stores. Like, we have this store up in Canada called Giant Tiger, which is like a discount store, but it's fairly well known, it's fairly big, right? Mm-hmm. So I joined their Facebook chat and they're like, we're giving out 10 $50 gift cards and two $250 gift cards. So I'm thinking, I walk in this chat, all right, ladies, because it was nothing but ladies in there. I'm like, all right, I'm gonna win. So I just started firing off witty comments and they're asking, what are some of your favorite holiday traditions and stuff? So I fire out a few and then at the end of the night, they're like, okay, we're going to announce our winners. And they go through the 10 winners and they're like, blah, 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 blah. And our two grand prize winners, our first winner is Michael Dodd, $250. I'm thinking, let's go. Totally knew that was going to happen. No, I didn't. I just had a really good friggin' feeling about it. It's like, you know how sometimes you get those marketing emails? They're like, join our Facebook chat or enter your email address to win, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just like, I got a good feeling about this. I'm going to go enters it. And I won. So let that be said. If there's ever a contest and it says throw in your email address or join on Facebook, just do it because you never know. Like, this is like when I won my trip to Vegas, I won on a random text message from 7-Eleven. So you never know, man. Luck is in the air. The holidays are here. So let's go, boys. I'm going to spend that money on $250 worth of cheese.
No, you're not.
She thinks that.
See,
I'm going to buy something really stupid.
I've seen people that are on Twitter that are like, I have $15,000 to give away and the first X amount of people get free money. And I'm like, yeah, I somehow doubt that, dude.
Yeah, I know. I know exactly the dude that you're like talking about. But then again, you never know, because a friend of mine, she does this thing on Twitch, and she is a Twitch streamer, and a guy came in last month and dropped $3,000 in her chat. He gifted $150 $25 tier 3 subscriptions to her channel. Just wow. For streaming. And she's like, holy shit. And we're like, oh my God, is this guy for real? Yeah, he is. And he'll drop in from time to time just to say hi. So I know there's another dude on Twitch. I think his name is Mr. Beast. We'll just drop in, drop a few grand if he likes you. He's like, all right, well, I've done my good deed for the day. And off into the night he goes. So yeah, you never know, man. Right place, right time.
Yeah, it makes me want to sometimes go investigate that and go, okay, so give me free stuff.
You know what? You know where's the best place to win free stuff? And
where?
Here is a pro tip, Facebook. Because everybody wants you to go like, share their page, and tag a few people. Just do it. I've won pizzas. I've won gift cards. I've won a home security system. I've won... like easily probably about $3,000 worth of shit from Facebook.
I remember years ago on Twitter, I won a couple of flash drives from HP just because I was like the X number of person that managed to guess a particular question that they asked at the right time. And then they were like, hey, you win. And I was like, yay. Free stuff.
I think the most I've won on Twitter is I think I've won probably a couple $1,000 worth of gift cards over like 10 years. because I do a lot of those contests. Like, there's one person in Canada, I forget what her specific Twitter handle is, but she does a lot of PR and marketing, and she's always like, we're gonna, over the course of 1 hour, they're gonna do this Twitter chat, and it's always for like a big company or a movie or some other thing, and they'll have you answer a bunch of questions, and I'll just answer generically or things that I think genuinely are interesting. And usually, if there's not too many people in the chat, I'll win. And I'm actually surprised I'm not blacklisted. but yeah, like, seriously, when it comes to online contests, if you know they're reputable, just do it. You have nothing to lose but 5 seconds of your time.
Yeah, I kind of get it. Like, at times there's the opportunity where you could possibly maybe for sure win something. And then there's times where you're like, is this for real?
Yeah. Like, it's so strange because the amount of people who enter versus the amount of people that don't is so skewed. Like, there have been contests where I know the prize is worth like a couple $1,000 and they'll have less than 30 entries. Because people assume that other people have entered the contest, so they just don't bother. Like, right now, there's a contest I just entered today. It's for a radio station that's very far away from me, but I know their online presence is remarkably small. So they're like, this is for our online community only. So I'm maybe competing against maybe 300 people, and that's at the higher up, and that's at the higher end of guessing.
Hmm.
Oh, my wife wants me to tell a story about, I'm going to leave certain details out of this thing, but I've won a couple of Xboxes through Doritos and it's because, a couple of years ago, they used to have this thing where, you could enter codes from the back of the bag.
Okay.
And that's how I won. I just entered a shit ton of these codes every day for like 2 weeks. And one day I got a call from Doritos/PepsiCo. They're like, are you Mike Dodd? I'm thinking, oh shit, here it comes. They've caught on to my clever scheme. And they're like, hey, you just won an Xbox. And I'm like, holy shit, really? They're like, yeah, here, answer this like skill testing question. And I'm really terrible at math. So Blair happened to be home this one day. So I'm like, hold on, let me get a pad and paper. I'm going to read the question back as you read it to me to make sure that I understand it. So me and Blair are both doing the math question at the same time. And she's a teacher, so she has to know her math. So I'm thinking, all right, cool. I got my answer. And I'm like, is the answer X? And they're like, yes, it is. You win a stupid thing. And that's how I got one of my two Xboxes. I'm hoping to pull the same thing when it comes to PS4s, but I think they've changed how a lot of the contest works. I've won a bunch of like little things like stickers, clothes, stuff like that. And obviously being a chunky dunky person, a lot of the clothes just don't fit. Right now I'm going for a contest for a Nintendo Switch. And if I win it, I'm going to send it to a friend of mine because she's like, I really want a Switch. I'm thinking, well, I already have a Switch and I don't care. So if I win, happy birthday. Because her birthday is in January anyhow. So, but still, that's enough of a humble brag for one day. I'm so sorry, folks, but I was just really hype and just want more people to share the wealth. If you can enter contests, just do it.
Yeah, it's definitely something you should try at least, you know, every so often.
Yeah, because what do you have to lose but just a couple of seconds of time?
As long as it's a couple of seconds. If you're sitting there filling out a biography, then it's not worth it.
Actually, those ones depends. And once again, play math. Think about the amount of people that are actually going to fill out those surveys versus the people that don't. You're competing against a very small but dedicated pool, but a very small pool. I won a tablet. Actually, that's how I won my iPad. a couple of years ago. I won it from doing a phone survey. And then in August of this past year, from filling out a survey at a grocery store. That's how I got my little Android tablet. So if you're willing to spend time filling out those giant surveys, sometimes it pays off, but I always assume you're competing against a small but dedicated crowd. But if it's an easy survey, you may be competing against a larger pool of people. But again, you can't win if you don't enter. It's kind of like the whole lottery thing. You can't win if you don't play.
True. True.
So, anyway.
So, going into a lot of internet suckage. So there's been a few things. One of them kind of circles around YouTube. In the fact that they kind of seem to be noticing that nobody wants to pay for their content anymore.
Well, I can't say that I'm surprised either, because as cool as content might be, like, say, Cobra Kai, I don't care enough to pay for it. And even if I had YouTube Premium, it just means I can close the app and have the music still playing and it's ad free. Whoopee-doo. Ads don't bother me that much. I mean, in full disclosure, I use an ad blocker for most people. Certain channels I don't, but for the most part I do.
Yeah, I do the same. I have an ad blocker built into my browser that actually blocks YouTube ads, and it also blocks ads on websites. And if it's a website I frequent a lot,
then you'll just whitelist it.
Then I whitelist it, and I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. You know, I mean, it's not a big deal. I mean, some of them put a limit on how much you can view it with the ad blocker, because they can see that now. Mm-hmm. But the same time, like, I don't know. When I've listened to YouTube, like, had music on or a video playing while I'm doing something around the house, I just leave the screen on. It doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
Because it's not worth shelling out $12 a month for me for that. Plus, I mean, they have original content, but is it really, like, all worth it? As opposed to something like a Netflix or an Amazon or a Hulu at this point in time.
Mm-hmm. Like, some of it, I don't know. I mean, some of it seems like there is some Netflix stuff coming up on the horizon that looks like it might be worth paying for. But as of right now, I guess YouTube Red or YouTube Premium, it was an experiment. If anything, it gathered data, and it got them user information, which is more valuable than probably the so many people that were paying into the service anyway. And I know that sounds counterintuitive, but now they have habits, now they have hard data they can use and sell. So, I don't know. Can't say I'm totally surprised with it. I obviously don't care.
Like, they state that in 2019, they'll be making all of their YouTube originals ad-supported to meet the growing demand of a more global fan base, saying that the next phase of our original strategy will expand the audience of our original creators and provide advertisers with content that reaches the YouTube generation. And more or less, it's not that they're getting away from the original content, it's that they're just going to make it ad-supported because why not? I mean, it's an extra way to get people's stuff for free, but they have to suffer through an ad. Although I'm sure that they'll still have the pay thing to get around the ads, but it ultimately doesn't impact me because I rarely watch YouTube at this point in time.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, I used to be a Netflix subscriber. I'm not anymore. I watch Hulu. And for the most part, like, I stream stuff directly from the TV show providers' websites. So, I mean, they're ad supported, but at the same time, it doesn't bother me because either way, I was going to have to watch it if I watched it on over the air cable or if I watched on their website. So, like, it ultimately doesn't impact me either way on that, because I'm not paying for it either way, so.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see how it will affect things going forward, whether their YouTube premium shows will get less of a budget. They say ad supported. You know what? I'm cool sitting through a 15 second ad or even a 30 second ad, but anything beyond that, I've seen a few people where there are ads that are like tens of minutes long now.
Oh, I know. I cannot fathom that or understand why somebody would subject themselves to that garbage.
Do you remember from years ago, there was a guy on YouTube, and I hope this guy gets hit by a train. I really mean it. His name was Ty Lopez.
And he
was the asshole who sat in his garage, and he's talking about, look at my Ferrari. But you know what's more important than my Ferrari? These books. And he would go on and on about his books and his Ferrari and all this other. It was so friggin' stupid. And then there was this other dude. He was like, I think he was like some Chinese guy. And he was going on and on and on about this muscle milk or something. I think his name was Mike Chang or something. Equally as annoying. Although I would put up, if I could get Logan Paul money, I would seriously put those guys in a fight. If I could have Ty Lopez fight this Mike Chang guy, MMA style, I would pay. That is some YouTube money I would seriously put money on. Because these ads were so annoying for like 3 years. And everybody made like memes out of them. I think if you type in Ty Lopez meme on like Twitter, or not Twitter, on YouTube, you'll find like hundreds of different like remixes for it. How the guy has more books than Ferraris, or more Ferraris than books. It's so stupid, but some of them are so cleverly edited. It's pretty amusing to say the least.
Yeah, I do you remember the days of like stupidvideos.com and Albino Black Sheep and Ebom's World and the things that were pre-YouTube and we could see a lot of the same kind of stupidity on it?
Oh yeah, like I love old internet. In fact, I was actually doing some research for today's show, and there was a video series I used to be a huge fan of, and used to do these stunts because I'm a stupid jackass. This is pre-Jackass. It used to be a group out of Philadelphia, or more specifically Westchester, Pennsylvania. They were known as the CKY Crew, and that's Bam Margera, Rab himself, Brandon DiCamillo, Raekwon, etc., etc., Ryan Dunn. And he used to be a professional skateboarder, Bam Margera. He still is, but as he was just starting to get big, he got some money from one of his sponsors to make a skate video, but they're like, can you fill it with something else? And he's like, yeah, I can do that. And it was all these stupid skits of like them playing football or hitting each other in the head with sticks or jumping over shopping carts. Stupid crap you'd see on Jackass later on. And it got really big on the internet. This is just as things are starting to hit. So the first video was called CKY Land Speed. And it started to get big on like Real Player. You could download it, and this is probably about 2000 something, so internet video is very much in its infancy. Like Ebom's World was still around, or was around, Newgrounds, shit like that. Trying to think of what else was there around that time that was interesting and stupid.
Yeah, I remember signing up for stupidvideos.com.
I had no idea about that site, actually. I was an Ebom's World kid.
Yeah, well, I watched all three. I actually had a subscription to stupidvideos.com because they only allowed you to watch like so many videos or something at the time. And I was like, but I must watch these. And like they had like dumb fake commercial things like Trunk Monkey and all this stuff, you know, with like Chevrolet and, you know, somebody's trying to break into your car, and then you know, they bump this button that's Trunk Monkey, and the monkey comes out and clubs the guy or like kills the guy and throws him over a bridge or something. And it was just ridiculous. And then I remember like Ebom's World and albinoblacksheep.com, which kind of took over a lot of Ebom's World when a lot of stuff went kind of off the deep end. Like there was a lot of infighting between creators on Ebom's World or not getting paid on there, and so they just were they jumped ship. So it was kind of funny in that regard. I don't know if you remember a guy named Frederick Fox on there.
Yep, I remember him quite well, actually.
He had a lot of the stupidest, like, freaking videos, like, on it, but they were hilarious at the same time.
Do you remember, this is probably about this time, do you remember a stupid internet video called Salad Fingers?
Salad Fingers. It sounds familiar.
There was just this, it's this weird, creepy green guy, and he has these creepy spoons for fingers. And it's just, it's so incredibly, and this will make the episode PG-13. It's so fucked up. There is no other word for it. It is so weird. And I had a friend of mine in college, Ashley, because I went to college in 2006 to 2010. So right when internet video was really hitting its stride of like early content creators and stuff like that. And it was just some of the weirdest crap, dude, I have ever seen in my life. Another early internet favorite that I loved. Google this one, kids. My hands are bananas. And my friend Ashley, once again.
I forgot
again,
all about that, but that is
oh
hilarious.
My God, you know about it.
Yes.
And my friend Ashley found it. And for like 2 years of college, we'd walk by each other in like the residence or the hallways. He'd be like, beware the milky pirate. And we just would quote internet videos at each other, and it was pre-meme, before memeing was cool. We had internet videos.
What was another one that I remember, like Mr. Weeble?
I don't think I saw that one.
Well, he's done you know, narwhals and things like that. Or like badger.
Yes, mushroom. I love that.
And there's a number of funny ones from that guy. I'm trying to think of another one. The Nyan Cat thing that was on there.
The Numa guy.
The Numa guy, the Star Wars kid. I'm trying to think of some other ones.
Chocolate Rain, Tazon Day.
Yeah, he actually follows me on Twitter.
Yeah, same here.
I was like, man, I remember that stuff. That was pretty hardcore stuff. And then he actually got to do that Cherry Chocolate Rain for like Dr. Pepper, or their like Cherry Dr. Pepper or something years ago. Which was funny. I don't know. We used to have just so many really weird videos online.
And there were content creators that really stuck out in your mind. Nowadays, there's hundreds of thousands of them, and you can name a few of the big ones, like PewDiePie, Ninja, but he's a streamer.
Yeah, see, those two guys don't really resonate with me, but I guess it's like those are like new generation things, because like I didn't even know who Ninja was until about like a month ago.
I know who Ninja is because I'm in the Fortnite community. Like, obviously, I just watch. I don't play because screw that game. But I love watching.
I tried playing it. I was like, this is just stupid. I was like, I went back to Battlefield.
It was the building that got me. Then Black Ops 4 came out and all was right with the world. But anyway, yeah. And PewDiePie, he's still huge, but he's just not as hip, I guess, as he once was, because people talk about Ninja and Dr. Disrespect and Keemstar. Trying to think of like other people.
Do you remember Razorick?
The name sounds familiar.
They did the Mario versus Sonic videos where they would just absolutely bludgeon each other in the videos.
No, I don't remember that.
It was like a fight to the death. It was almost like the ultimate showdown of Ultimate Destiny.
Oh, okay.
Kind of in a sense, like, which is another funny one where Mr. Rogers wins out of everything.
I remember when I remember the first year when Epic Rap Battles came out. And they're supposed to be coming back next year.
Yeah, I didn't catch it until season two, but I really enjoyed that series of what they did with it.
I have two of those raps memorized. I have Hulk Hogan versus Kim Jong Il memorized, and I have Darth Vader versus Hitler memorized. Because I remember a friend of mine named Scotty showed them to me. He's like, Mike, you're not going to believe this. Because this kid, I used to have his finger on the pulse of everything weird internet-wise. And he showed them to me. And I remember waiting weeks and weeks around for new videos when they come out. I'd replay them and listen to them endlessly. Another early internet person who still makes videos today. He is a friend of mine, so I'm going to preface that. I don't think he's as funny as he once was, which is unfortunate. And that's the angry video game nerd, James Rolfe. I remember back when he was the angry Nintendo nerd back in 2007.
I think a lot of the reason why some of those people have gotten away from it is because like the shtick has kind of gotten old, and then the fact that people just don't resonate with that type of content anymore.
Well, there's only so many ways you can say a game sucks, or where you start to string together vulgarities where it doesn't make any sense anymore. And don't get me wrong, I love James. James is a dear friend. He's done a lot of good things for me personally and professionally, but I haven't had a good laugh with his content for a while, and that's unfortunate. And another person who's still around, and it surprises me because, and I'm not going to talk much about this just because I'm so over it, was the Nostalgia Critic. He's still doing his shtick, and it's been around since 2007. And
that's like kind of blew over like a ton of bricks, especially recently, but it's been kind of dead for years, really.
Well, the fact that the channel still has over 1 million subscribers and it's survived the Change the Channel controversy, which happened earlier on this year, which I'm not going to discuss at any length, was just surprising to me that a channel can survive that. I guess if your content makes enough people quote unquote laugh, they're willing to forgive almost anything. It's where the art transcends the artist, so to speak. And I see a lot of my friends online still, unfortunately, dealing with some of the fallout from it. And just kind of moving on from that. Other people that I used to really like, I used to like watching a lot of the Machinima type content. I never got into Red versus Blue, but I liked Machinima as a channel. They have two guys on there named Steven Larson. They used to do a show called 10 for the Win. And then they eventually became a pro wrestling channel in the last like couple of years. And they've got quite a substantial Patreon and substantial following online where they get invited to events like 2K flies them out for stuff, I think, whenever the new video game comes out, stuff like that. But they have all these professional wrestlers doing the intro for their show. They got like Bobby Roode, they got Tasha Banks, Charlotte Flair. So cool people. But I remember when they started out watching them. Another group whose content has changed over the years and eventually got bought out by Rooster Teeth or Screw Attack. And I've been involved with them for a number of years, not so much since 2010, 2011 is when I checked out after Hard News came to an end.
There's also, too, a lot of the smaller channels or smaller artists have gotten eaten up by bigger entities over the years.
Because they have content that people want. In fact, I remember when James Rolfe got bought up by Screw Attack because he was hosted on there and there was contracts. There's a whole thing. I mean, if you want to read the Wikipedia articles on it, a lot of it's pretty accurate. But yeah, a lot of smaller channels and smaller content got eaten up by bigger entities, or people got bought up by MTV at the time. I remember when Game Trailers was a thing. Screw Attack was making quite substantial money off of that due to like contracts of that, and I don't want to go into specifics with it, but you'd be surprised if you were an early content creator and you were really good. A lot of people were willing to give you a shot, and I'm surprised a lot of smaller content creators from that time didn't get hit with like copyright and stuff like that, because using copyrighted works, stuff like that, because that's when really the era of the internet critic was born, back when we had early YouTube, we had blip.tv and everything like that. You had all these different video platforms, and a lot of people were making their money. One of the people who became very, very, very successful out of that is a woman named Lindsay Ellis. Used to be known as the Nostalgia Chick. Now she works for PBS producing documentaries and stuff like that. And she came out of that remarkably well. Say what you will about her fan base that follows her around and harasses her at times, but such as being an internet personality. And that's something that they don't tell you about being a being online. I can only imagine, because I remember people were talking shit about E-Bombs World years ago, how he stole content, and he did. Stuff like that. And there was a video I just watched recently talking about people who would copy other content creators, like the most famous comparison probably being the Angry Video Game Nerd versus the Irate Gamer. And he was popular because YouTube featured him for a while, yet it was pretty clear he was ripping James off, like same material, same jokes, same games at times. Whereas James was a very talented YouTuber and knew what he was doing and eventually found his success and latched onto the right media entities at the time. The Irate Gamer, his shtick eventually got old and now he toils in obscurity, or so I hear. I haven't watched, I think I've seen maybe three or four of his videos in his entire career, just because I was curious. Mm-hmm. But it's so weird to see how the internet has either made certain people that are mainstays of internet, or it's the new Wild West. There's new people out there, because a lot of the people that I used to work with on a number of different sites, they just don't produce stuff anymore. Or if they do, it's all supported by Patreon, or it's all supported on YouTube Live via the chat system. Like, I know Screw Attacks, Craig Skismas, has a new thing called Game Attack, and I say new within the last couple years, but you get what I'm saying. And he does a lot of content there. They do Death Battle on Screw Attack.
Yep, Game Attack. I've watched those.
And that's all Rooster Teeth now. Like, Craig, I'm pretty sure he sold it to Rooster Teeth, or either way, they got absorbed. And now Game Attack is its own YouTube channel, has its own community, and they still refer to us as G1s and everything. And it's a very well and supported community. I love the people who, like, this year they did Extra Life, and they raised like $4,000 for children's hospitals. And that's pretty amazing for a community of YouTubers who just come to, or a community of fans of a YouTuber. I think that's actually pretty neat. But yeah, I mean, going back to the original point here, a lot of the old internet people, I don't know what they're up to anymore. I only know the people that exist in my circle that are still doing things, like Lindsay Ellis still does things. And those who shall not be named. And I'm trying to think of who else really does stuff. Not a lot of early people that I can think of. They kind of moved on to get real jobs, or they work in online media, maybe behind the scenes, or maybe they've retired entirely.
Yeah. And then recently even we had like Defy Media.
Yep, which means with them going under, because that was a huge influx of Google money to help support these YouTube creators and YouTube channels. With that gone, we lost Smosh Gaming.
Well, we lost Smosh, they lost Clever, the Warp Zone,
yep.
Which I was a huge fan of the Warp Zone. And they lost, what are some of their other ones? I don't know. They've got a nice hefty catalog of people that were on their payroll anyway. And yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's kind of just,
well, no one really has odd. Well, no one has quite figured out the online video pay scale yet.
Nobody's figured it out with podcasting either, but
yeah. It's just, it's not, nobody knows how to do it, or nobody knows how to do it right, or nobody knows how to make it sustainable, because you and I, Steve, have been doing this for 10 years plus now.
Oh yeah, easy.
And for us, it's enthusiast slash you and I, our media, we're not
going, mainstream.
Yeah, we're not mainstream. We're very underground, but we have a following. We have an establishment because our brand has been around for so long. We've earned that right. Kids coming up now, unless your YouTube channel catches fire or your podcast catches fire somehow, man, it sucks to be you, man.
It's really unfortunate nowadays. Like I remember, and especially with the metrics changing on how mm-hmm. they measure the metrics now, because they've kind of come out with these new reports now, and a lot of these like right now podcasting companies are kind of getting signed up with the IAB board for a 2.0 metric scale that they're having to get certified in. A lot of these companies to properly measure, and there's a number of companies that just are not on board with this new measurement yet. And so when the new measurement kicks in, your listeners and subscribers and your episode metrics sometimes can drop as much as half, if not more, depending on various factors of however they measure it. And even with YouTube listens now, or not YouTube listens, iTunes listens now, they don't go by like the 30-second for a minute or for a one listener metric now. It's like 60 seconds or something like that. And if you pause it and continue it later, it doesn't give you another count, whereas before it would. So like often you would have redundancies in the counts compared to the way that they used to do it. So like even like our podcast, I've seen since transitioning from one, you know, from Blog Talk Radio to Spreaker, I've seen like the numbers cut in half because a lot of it was just, you know, different readings.
I mean, it's hard to get established now. And unless literally you're in the right place at the right time, or you happen to have that
the right connections too.
The right connections. Yeah. That lightning spark that can get you started. I mean, the only reason we're as successful at Twig as we are is because I've been in the industry for like 12 years and people know who I am. They're like, oh, that's Mike. He's a good guy. Doesn't matter whether I have the listens that I used to or not. They're like, that's Mike. We like him. He's a fat guy. But yeah, I mean, it's weird to be up and coming to want to be a content creator. And I know we touched upon this a couple of weeks ago, just what it means to come up as a YouTube or a podcast creator now. It's harder than it ever has been. It's not to say you shouldn't try, obviously, because if you genuinely care about creating content, you absolutely should. But I think it's so hard to stay memorable. Do I think there'll be another James Rolfe? No, I really don't. By the same token, there'll never be another Nostalgia Critic. And you could argue there are tons of new video essayists and stuff like that. People that are really good. There's a few people that I listen to and I can't get to my YouTube tabs right now to tell you who they are. But to have the brand recognition that these people have, it doesn't matter if they have 2 or 3 million subs, if nobody knows who they are, and you'd think with 2 or 3 million subs, you would, you know, it's just, it's hard to get noticed. Like you're on a platform that has tens of millions of users.
Yeah. It's in really any of the platforms anymore. It's very difficult to get started. Now, if there's a new platform, such as like, you know, Mixer, if you're a streamer and you're not on Twitch and you're not on YouTube, you know, that, and you're getting started on there, like there's opportunity to grow, to be bigger than, anybody on the platform, theoretically, just because you would be on that platform.
Yeah. But at the same time, it's Mixer, who cares?
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate because you've actually hit on something really, really, really important. As new platforms comes out, is it easy to get noticed? Yes, but unless those platforms catch fire, like the three platforms that have come up in the last couple of years that are important. Instagram is huge. Snapchat is huge, but isn't profitable, which I can't say I'm surprised. And do you remember when Vine was a thing?
Yeah, and then that promptly died.
Yeah, I mean, there are people who are making money off of being Vine stars. People who are making 6-second videos and somehow blew up and got money.
Yeah, I remember watching a lot of people that were doing those just because they were humorous and they were quick, so it didn't really take up that much time. But
yeah, and I'm thinking, will we see another Instagram? Well, okay, here's the big question. Will we see another Twitter? Probably.
Yeah, probably. Like, we'll see another Facebook, too, eventually, because they're starting to bottom out. People are actually starting to uninstall their apps off their phones.
Well, yeah. Like, do you remember, this would be months ago, but you and I had this conversation about us unplugging for a week.
Mm-hmm.
And just how therapeutic that's becoming. People are starting to realize social media is frankly goddamn toxic.
It is.
After a while, you just get so burnt out on it. I mean, now by that same token, I've made friends in a Twitch community in the last couple of months who've been really, really supportive, good people. Because I'm a big fan of this one streamer called Fuya, and her stream is just, her chat, they're younger, but they're funny, but they're also very, very, very supportive. And that's what I like in a community. But I notice on Facebook, it's nothing but politics. It's people coming out as, frankly, terrible human beings. It's like Facebook is almost where you let all your bad ambitions or your bad baggage hang out. And then it gets amplified in this echo chamber where you find other douchebags like you. And you either reinforce a positive message or you reinforce a terrible message. And sometimes I hang out on a friend of the show, Blanchard's Facebook, sometimes. And
I try to, like,
don't read the comments.
Well, to me, like, I tend to shy away from a lot of people's Facebooks just for the fact that unless it's something that is like entertainment purposes, I kind of shy away from it because most of the people are very like political on there. And And the unfortunate part is depending on which side of the pendulum you swing to, depends on, for one, all of these social networks are very progressive leftist. They've let it be known. I mean, it's not even a secret at this point. And that, you know, whether you're on that side of the fence or not, is irrelevant. Like, I'm not arguing that point. And if you're on, you know, the other side of the pendulum, there's a lot of times when you're spouting your opinion, which I'm not saying that either side shouldn't have their opinion. It's how you go about it.
Yeah.
But they often get blocked, even if it's for something that's or like banned from the platforms because of they're on the opposite side of the spectrum instead of, you know, some kind of an understanding. But it's just because they can hit the ban hammer because they own the platform, as opposed to somebody that's using it. So I don't know. It gets really touchy on a lot of that stuff. So like I try to stay neutral on everything that I'm on. Or make it as vague as possible if I'm going to comment on something that lets them know that, yeah, I don't approve of this particular behavior, but, you know, this is my thought on it. But I keep it clean to where it cannot hinder me in, you know, employment opportunities.
I mean, it's no secret I'm pretty liberal with how I think, but I won't go extreme one way or the other. Like, I try, my rule of thumb is be respectful. Everybody has an opinion. Everybody has a right to it. But it's when you start forcing extreme views one way or the other. And when conflict happens, we've got a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You have to sit down and talk it out if we can, if it's even possible at that point.
There's always a way to find common ground. And that's kind of where the thing kind of gets lost. And like, exactly. I'm more of the conservative nature. So like, I'm not saying I'm right winged or any of that crap. There's people on this side of the spectrum that I cannot stand because just frankly, they're idiots. But, that goes on both sides of the fence. So like,
oh, again, God, yeah.
So, I mean, like, you know, finding the common ground is definitely the, you know, you have your differing opinions on how things should be on, you know, but the human nature side of things, like it's just don't be a dick. Like that's just kind of where it goes down. So
follow the golden rule, treat others as you wish to be treated and realize that we can come to, everybody should be able to talk, but we should be able to talk without vitriol and hatred. Mm-hmm. In a conversation. Mm-hmm. And that's something else too, with a lot of these, to swing this back around to kind of YouTubers, being political as a YouTuber has assassinated careers.
Oh yeah. And it's not just on YouTube. It's been actors too.
Yeah. I mean, one notable YouTuber I can think whose career got very, it was never the same since. And that was JonTron. And he had some very questionable things to say. And I personally find JonTron funny, but after those comments that he made, I want to say this was back in 2017, 2016. It was in the last year or two. And I was like, wow, that's kind of screwed up, dude. And you don't see a lot of stuff come out of his productions anymore, which is unfortunate. And I'm not saying unfortunate because him specifically, I'm saying, when things get political, things get messy. Things get messy real quick. But you also find out some of these entertainers, we find out either have a dark past or they're douchebags or something terrible and dark in and of itself. Hell, you look at the Me Too movement in Hollywood, and it's brought a lot of scumbags to light.
But it's also now it's also self-assassinating people on their own side.
Yeah, because you don't know, because I'm watching a lot of Law and Order right now, because go Michael Moriarty. But the point of the matter is it should be innocent until proven guilty. Let the law decide. But at the same time, believe women. Where do you, like, what do you do?
Yeah, it's a touchy line.
Yeah, and it's so messed up because... And I remember being like, I grew up on Law and Order, and that's how I've always viewed the legal system, innocent until proven guilty. And now mob mentality tends to take over, and they're like, this person is guilty, this person is did this, did that, this, that, and the other thing. And a person has only given their testimony, they've given one side of the story.
But it's also the echo chamber and the politics getting involved, and then it's also the fact that you've, you know, like you
it
said,
it blows up.
The mob mentality. So it explodes and gets blown out of proportion. Instead of having people coherently, you know, answering questions, you have people, you know, assassinating other people's characters. So like
it's so touchy.
Yeah. It's not right either way. Like it's, you know, what happens to people is not right. And in the character assassination is not right either. So like it's hard to figure out who believes, you know, who's right.
Yeah. Because there is no, It's hard to move forward in the current political climate, in the current social climate, because our social climate has changed how our legal system is functioning. And I believe everybody should have their day in court. Everybody should have, the system is there to work. And I'm a very believer in, the law is flawed at times, yes.
There's a lot of stupid laws, too.
There's a lot of stupid laws, but there's a lot of good people fighting on the right side of the law. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I guess I believe in the heroic lawyer doing the right thing. Not everybody's in it for money. There's people who literally believe in truth and justice is blind, so to speak. But that's a philosophical discussion for a different day.
Yeah.
Point of the matter... Sorry, Steve, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. You go ahead and finish your thought.
I was going to say, my thought is, it's kind of amazing how much YouTube and online culture has changed everything. Like, this is not this is not what I thought 2018 would look like. If you asked me 10 years ago, what do I expect the social political climate to look like? I wouldn't have, I expected Facebook might have been a thing like LiveJournal, where it's just there, where you just update like, oh, today I walked my dog. I had a glass of milk. I had cookies. I had a date today. It was okay. I never would have expected Facebook and Twitter to be used in court proceedings. I never would have expected it to become a government tool. I never would have expected social media and YouTube to become integral parts of society. For no. better or worse, never would have seen it coming. I'm not a futurist in that regard. Like, I never would have seen podcasting go this way.
No. What's really funny is, like, when we started this journey, I had no idea where it was going. I still don't. And to be honest, like, I mean, I've got a goal for the new site for 2019 and some of the things I plan on doing. Like, I plan on writing more. I plan on doing a couple videos here or there. You know, at least once or twice a month. And then like, I'm trying to figure out like a way to refocus, you know, not only this show, but, I have another concept in the back burner that I'm toying with the idea, as well as like resurrecting some of my shows that are kind of on a brief hiatus right now. So like, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out this happy medium plus,
just don't burn yourself out, my friend.
No, it's I'd have to have the right focus and the right interest level in things before I go getting myself on that bandwagon again. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that I'm trying to think of is, no, recently we've had the whole mess with Patreon.
Oh God, yeah, this is something that I saw happen, and there's been a few people. In short. When you go on Patreon or Twitch, even when you donate to a streamer, you have the option to refund that through your bank or through your credit card company. Now, when you do that, the streamer gets hit with a charge through the bank or through the credit card company. I can't remember which, but either way, it costs the streamer, so they have to refund your money plus a $20 charge. And I saw a person's Twitter account get suspended where her Patreon account was negative $2,700. Now, evidently, she was selling her premium Snapchat. So, not exactly on the line. There was a talk about this on Reddit. But a more personal story to relate to this is I had a friend of mine who is a Twitch streamer, had several chargebacks. And this person was like, you know, if you need me to refund your money, fine, but don't be a douchebag about it. I will, but know that you're costing me money at the same time. And it sucks because let's say you donate a dollar to the streamer, right?
And then they refund it.
They refund that dollar. That refund turns into $21 because it's a $20 or so fee from the bank. And there's been people that have been weaponizing this, where they'll go into a Twitch streamer's or a Patreon streamer or a Patreon account or whoever, a content creator, they'll donate a huge amount of money and they'll pull it back. Or they'll make a bunch of donations and pull it back. So they get dinged. Another friend of mine who's in the RPG industry had this happen to them at Gen Con. And the credit card company's like, well, we're not refunding this person. They got their stuff. This person's just being an asshole. And so that was a happy ending. But I've had friends of mine get right screwed with like chargebacks. And it's discouraging to think that something that was put in place for content creators to accept donations from their fans or Patreons who want to support their work or however you want to put it, that they can weaponize this. This was meant to be a good thing. This goes in the pile of, this is why we can't have nice things. Like, because I'm in the process of starting a Patreon for my Dungeon Master service for hire. Now, if I get a chargeback, I will know where you live and I don't have two legs, but I will break my foot off in your ass if you charge me back. because I will give you the service. I will have a recording of the service I gave you, just in case. But point of the matter is, this is supposed to be something to help support creators. This is a tactic that is gross. It's abusing a system. And why you gotta be a douchebag?
Yeah, and see, that's the thing too, is like I've toyed around with the idea of doing, you know, because like you can tip on YouTube now, and you can do that on Twitch, and you can, you know, you can do the Patreon route, you can do, you know, your own membership on your website. So there's like a variety of ways that you could do this, and I've toyed around with the idea of doing it either a membership thing on Geekcast Radio or doing a Patreon, and I'm still, you know, kind of thinking that idea over of what I would do and what we would provide and all that kind of stuff. But the same time, like I almost feel like that's kind of at this state in the game, like I would have to come up with something completely new at this point, just because I feel like we've been giving stuff for free for so long. Like I don't know how I would structure that. That whole concept. But then that, you know, that article comes out and I'm like, well, that's kind of worrisome. You know, you could get all this stuff going and then somebody could just, you know, just to screw with you, you know, just do that whole thing, you know, no matter what platform you're on, they could do it, but it's still, you know, kind of douchey. And there's actually been videos of people that have done that, you know, on YouTube just to get a reaction out of the person on their stream. And then, you know, then they get the reaction of after they've yanked it from them, you know?
Yeah. Like, seriously, why would you do that to somebody? Like, what is wrong with you? But then again, you know, it's human nature, right?
Yes. People have to be a dick.
Yeah. For no real reason other than to be, hi, vindictive. I'm an asshat. For no particular reason, ha diddly ha ha. I don't get it. I mean, I really don't. And it makes me very wary to start it. But then again, I guess from my service, I'm a little bit more insulated because I'm offering to put, like, basically my game master for hire services. Hey, I'm going to run an Avenger for you and up to four of your friends for 4 hours at a time. My time is worth X amount of dollars, whatever. I probably will record the session just to have it for my personal records. This way I'm protected from chargeback saying I never got this service. Here's the audio evidence. And you agree to this before I take your money, so to speak. But other people who shoot photo shoots, who provide audio podcasts, or who basically anybody who provides a creative service, I could see this, you could get screwed over real fast.
See, my whole method is too, is like, if I was going to go this route, I would make sure that, one, like if I was going to have like a, you know, let's say a specialized podcast that was a, you know, subscription only service, with, you know, some video type content or whatever, I'm one of those weird people that keeps records forever. In my email account. So like my primary email account is not the Steve at Geekcast Radio. What's funny is I have all my emails routed to a secondary email account that's actually my primary. And so I have documented evidence from every one of those email accounts in this one email that I use for everything. And it goes back 10 years.
Yep. I've had the same Gmail account since 2007. I keep everything.
Yeah. I use a Hotmail account. So like I've had everything in this account for like 10 years. And thankfully so, like there was an incident last year where I needed to transfer the Geekcast Radio, it was this year, domain name from one web host to another. And I couldn't unlock the email account or the domain because I couldn't figure out what host I'd created it under. Mm-hmm. And they need, in order to unlock it, I had to have a certain ID number or something that they give you in the original sign up email. And I happened to have it in this email, and I was very thankful. But yeah, I mean, like, and when I send people emails of stuff, like I always send them so that like I get a receipt or, you know, something, so that it's kind of, I like to be documented. So like it would be one of those things, if I was going to do something like this, it would, I would have to have a lot of like red tape just to protect myself. So getting into a different route that kind of sucks for, depending on how you look at it. Funny thing is the person that wrote this article on the website that I'm quoting it from actually used to guest on podcasts on Geekcast Radio.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the FTC investigating video game loot boxes.
Yeah, this is something I can't say that I'm surprised. Is it's been a long time coming. And because I know over in Europe, this has been a big deal, and loot boxes have been suspended for sale for games like Overwatch. I want to say in Germany, I think. And in China, they have to tell you exactly what the odds are of your drops for like everything. So there's less, so it's not gambling. You know exactly what the odds are going in. And yet over here, they're just an industry unto themselves. I remember the first game that I remember having loot drops that really got me addicted. And I say that knowing full well, I've spent easily $1,000.
I'm about the same boat.
And that was Call of Duty Advanced Warfare in their supply drop system. Now, admittedly, I got everything I wanted. Like, I had the most stupid luck in the world, where I have every variant that was stat changing, I got them almost instantly. So go me. But other games like Overwatch, I don't have all the skins that I want. Yes, you can buy most of those skins by saving up the real world gold, and you do get duplicates. If you get the same skin, you'll get like 25 gold for it or something like that. I don't know, whatever. But there was supply drops for Infinite Warfare, I think there were, or there was like a case system where you could build your own weapons or something like that. But over here, the ESRB has basically said loot drops are an optional experience that enhance the user's experience. They are not mandatory, but they enhance the game. And they repeat this several times in their press release, that it enhances. And this most notably probably comes out of what happened with Star Wars Battlefront 2 from last year, which they couldn't have screwed up more if they wanted to. Where they had loot boxes tied to the progression system, where you'd get a random loot box, and let's say you're trying to improve your clone trooper, but you get like a droid. Yeah, I'm not. No. And eventually they took that out of the game.
Well, and what's funny about all this is now they're starting to refer to them as, you know, in-game purchases label, in some scenarios, but yes, while they are primarily like enhancements, some of the time they're not. And when I say that, I mean, for instance, Star Trek Online. When you, because there's an option where you can buy Zen, which mm-hmm. is the in-game currency. And then they give you bonuses for it at times, and then, you know, certain other things. Well, they have these opportunities, as it were, to kind of win. You know, they have these lock boxes,
mm-hmm.
and no, you don't play it, but they give you options of winning, and they list all these different starships that you're capable of getting with a certain type of lock box, and they're tier six, which are
the highest difficulty,
right? The highest option, like, so you could get, you know, with this particular, you know, Infinity lockbox that they just recently did, You know, you could get cruisers, you could get, you know, the Krenim ships, the Zindi, Tholian, the Kool, you know, Cardassian, Jem'Hadar, the Kelvin timeline, you know. So like I have the Kelvin Enterprise in the game, but I didn't get it from a lockbox. I bought it on the market with the end game currency of the, you know, by selling, you know, buying low and selling high of the keys that somebody originally had to spend money on to put in there. But so like they have a lot of stuff in there. So they also have like the Discovery, the cross field classes in there too. Mm-hmm. And occasionally they will put the original Enterprise A or the original refit Enterprise in there. It is a tier 6, mm-hmm. which normally is like, that is the nigh impossible one to get in the game.
Yeah.
And it's like 1.5 billion credits in the game or whatever to get if you, you know, have that kind of money in there.
How much would that cost in real world money?
About $350.
Get the shut the front door.
No, it's that much. Yeah. So it was kind of a, you know, and it was like $60 or something if you wanted to get the Kelvin Enterprise or something like that. So anyways, you know, you have the options of, you know, it says you have a small chance of dropping one of the, you know, ground and space filled packages. And they don't tell you your odds of winning any of this stuff. You usually get like a lobby, which is another form of currency in game. So there's like 6 different kinds of currency in game, and some of them are useless. The lobby you can only get by opening a lockbox. So, because you can't buy it anywhere else. So that means that you have to buy a key in order to open the lockbox, which they drop, you know, randomly all over the place so that you can get them on purpose. So you could easily drop, you know, tons and tons of money and, you know, opening and get nothing. Like I've opened probably, I don't know, 100 lockboxes, and some of that was with real and some of it not.
Have you gotten anything cool?
No.
I got to say, that's probably one of the, anything that's anything that is free to play will have an incredibly screwed up in-game economy.
It's, and that's the thing too, that I noticed when I was playing is the, it's either the same people keep winning.
It's geared towards whales. Basically, it's kind of like the whole kind of mobile game market, where basically a few high-end spenders keep the entire game afloat. And I'm sorry, my cat is talking.
It's okay.
thanks, Ayla.
But yeah, so like I noticed that was kind of a losing battle. And so that's why when I started figuring out in-game with, because I didn't know what to do with the credits in-game, like when I got them originally. So I just had a bunch of it like banked mm-hmm. and didn't even realize it. And so I was able to buy a ton of lock, you know, the keys for the lock boxes. In game, and so I just kept buying them low and selling them high, and then I would I get to the point I was buying 40 of them at a time, mm-hmm. 50 of them at a time, and then dumping them back on the market, and almost and some of them I'd make like an extra 100k, some of them I'd make an extra like 500k, just would depend. Sometimes people would post them way under market value, and I would luck out and make like an extra million off of them. Mm-hmm. And it took me about a good, you know, 4 months to save up for the Kelvin Enterprise. And then I think I still have probably 65 million in the game, which isn't enough to get anything that I would want.
That is so insane. I have millions of dollars. I can't get anything cool.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can buy occasionally for a couple mil, you can get like some of the uniforms. Like I've got pretty much all the uniforms unlocked now at this point, but which that's pretty much where I kind of go. And then I figured out too, with mining the dilithium, which you can convert Zen, which is the real money stuff, you can convert that into dilithium too. But I save up all the dilithium between all my different characters, and then I turn it into Zen when it's low cost, and then when it's back up again, I dump it into dilithium, and then when they have the Phoenix upgrade weeks, I buy them all up, and then I mass upgrade everything in there. So, but yeah, I mean, the whole thing with their the loot boxes, I think that to some degree needs to be regulated in a sense that we should know our odds from the get-go before you're dumping into it.
Oh, absolutely. Like anything like that needs to have the odds posted, or in the ideal world, here's the item you want. Here's how much it costs in real world money, or you can take your chances with this market. Here are your drop rates. I completely agree. Cause I know for Call of Duty, one of my weapons for Advanced Warfare, the Obsidian Steed, had a ridiculously low drop rate. I got it pretty easy, and I got lucky with it. Yet, when I played Call of Duty Black Ops 3, I think one of the guns I won, I must have spent easily like $100 to get the FAMAS rifle, and it was annoyingly hard to get. And had I known the drop rate, I probably wouldn't have done it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how they get you, because they know certain tentpole franchises like Star Trek, like Call of Duty, and like Overwatch, people are going to put money into it. Or like FIFA. I think FIFA has loot boxes. I'm not 100% sure on that. Or other microtransaction heavy games. Like, I know anything that's free to play will have an economy that is built around screwing you. It's just the way it is. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. That economy is designed to... You lose, sir. You stole fizzy lifting drinks. Good day, sir. There's not a lot you can really do about it. But if the FTC investigates and makes a recommendation to the ESRB or the big video game publishers, you need to do something about this. But I hate to say this, Steve. Your government tends to favor big business.
Right now.
I don't see how this is going to shake out well for us, the consumer.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you there, and it kind of is worrisome, but the same time, like I, granted, us as gamers, we're generally pretty stupid because we see something we want. We're like, you know, the Futurama joke of give me your, you know.
Shut Here's up and money. take yeah. my money.
Yeah.
I mean, so, if any game has done an economy right, it's Fortnite. The game is free to play. If you want something, you can unlock the tiers to buy it, or you can buy it directly. That is fair. If you want to advance your battle pass, you can pay to do that, or you can grind it out. And that game has seasons. Black Ops has a similar thing, but its economy is somewhat screwed up right now, where it's 100 COD points to skip a tier, but all the cool stuff is at super high tier. So you could drop $200 and get the unicorn gun and the new blackout character, mm-hmm. or you can play 1 hour, or you can play 1 hour and 10 minutes per tier, and you can get the tier for free. So you can grind it out, but the season only lasts 40, 50 days. So unless you can dedicate 4 hours a day every single day, you will not get it. Unless there's like a double tier weekend or something like that. So in-game economies need to change. Yes, there needs to be regulation. I don't see it happening anytime soon. That's fair. It's going to be up to the individual publishers to self-regulate. And they're going to look at their bottom line and say, can we still do this? Can we still make money while looking like the good guys here?
Yeah, and I agree. I just think that they need to give the odds and then kind of just let the chips fall where they may at that point. But because ultimately some people are going to dump the money and other people are not. But the fact that kids are getting involved with it now, it does kind of make it gambling, because you are gambling. You don't know if you're going to get what you're looking for. So... I think that's my final thoughts on it. What about you?
I think so. I mean, ultimately, I want regulation, but I want it to be fair to the consumer. I don't want big business to take advantage of us gamers, because there are going to be kids that get a hold of their parents' credit cards and go nuts. It's happened before. It will happen again. People will sell, like, it's nuts to spend money on virtual items that don't carry over year to year. Fortnite at least carries over season to season, whereas Call of Duty, those guns I bought in Advanced Warfare don't matter worth for shit in Black Ops 4. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see. And hopefully it works itself out in the next year or two. But we'll have to see what happens if the FTC investigates in the proper way and whether companies like EA, Activision, Blizzard, et cetera, will actually do the right thing and self-regulate.
Yep. So we have been...
We have been Mike the Birdman Dodd from ThisWeekInGeek.net. Be sure to be checking out our holiday gift guide, which will be dropping on December 12th, where we have things from Activision, Insight Editions, and many, many other places such as Paramount, Warner Brothers, and others. We'll be talking about what we think you should be buying for yourself and maybe giving presents that are coming from Santa Claus. So be sure to be looking out for that on December 12th.
And I've been Steve Megatron Phillips. Be sure to check out all the various things we have going on at Geekcast Radio as well as This Week in Geek. And till next time, get altered. Get geeky with the Altered Geeks.